The following talk was given by Dokai Georgeson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 27, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, first I will thank Dharma Field for the invitation to come here and speak. And I'm noticing the numbers here are increasing. I come almost every year. And in the past few years, you know, after COVID, you know, numbers were, we've been struggling, but I see, I think it's maybe twice as many people here than there were last year when I came.
So, you hit us on a good Sunday.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
You hit us on a good Sunday.
Okay. I don't have my hearing aids in. I forgot to put them in. And I kind of desperately need them. I've been told I have severe hearing loss in one of my ears. I don't believe it. I think it's moderate. That's my assessment. But apparently, I am always asking people to repeat things. In any event, again, thank you very much for the invitation to speak. I chose a text by Sekeharada Roshi, and I thought this might be a text that most of you maybe weren't acquainted with. But as I walked in your office, there I see on the right on the shelf a book by Harada Roshi. So that I'm not sure, but we'll see. The reason I'm kind of very warm toward Harada Roshi is because, a series of events. I'll just explain them. Steve said I did a pilgrimage in India and Japan. And in Japan, I traveled around for a year visiting different monasteries. I was trying to find the true Zen way of doing things. And believe me, even in Japan, there is not a standard way of doing things. It differs. And we can look even in the Katagiri Roshi lineage, and we don't do disciples, we don't do the same exactly the same forms. So I did not come to the place where I found the true form of Zen. And so now I just sort of improvise. having said that, also I have become good friends with Sekeharada Roshi's translator. Main translator, which is Daigaku Rumi. And right now he's the head teacher in St. Louis, a Confluence Zen Center in St. Louis area. And I first met him on that pilgrimage I was doing at Hoshinji. That's where Harada Seke Roshi taught. And I went there, and Harada Roshi never made any effort to learn English. So we always worked through, if you didn't speak Japanese, you would work through Daigaku as a translator. So I met Daigaku then, and I met Harada Roshi then too. And it's been a series of unusual coincidences that Daigaku and I just kept running into each other. And now I invite him and Rayren Gumbel from Milwaukee Zen Center to co-lead a session with me at Hokyoji once a year. So three of us have become quite friendly with each other. And so I've been looking more at Harada Roshi's teachings. So that's what I'm going to just read some things and comment. So one of the chapters he writes is called The Daily Practice of Zen. Zazen can broadly be divided into two, Zen within activity and Zen within stillness. Zen within activity embraces the other activities in our lives, such as work and so forth. Zen within stillness is what we do in a room like this when we sit. I would like to speak practically about how you can continue with Zen outside of the meditation hall, outside of retreat. Everyday life itself is Zen. As I have already said many times, drinking coffee, eating toast, washing your face, taking a bath, these are all Zen, even though we do not label them Zen. I would like you to be clear about this. Consequently, there is absolutely no need to choose between activities that are Zen and those that are not. Believe this firmly and have unshakable confidence in it. Then let go of this faith. This is the way I would like you to act. But in practice, this is not easy. It is a mistake for you to incorporate into your life things you have learned about Zen through books or by listening to others. This also includes the Zen practice you have done up until now. Well, that's kind of an interesting thing to say. And I think this last statement is the most important. It's we have, when we sit down and do Zazen or do anything in our life, we have to forget about everything we've learned about Zen in the past or anything in the past. Maybe a few weeks ago, I gave a talk on one of the old Nikayas. It's called Bhadekaraka in Pali. And Thich Nhat Hanh, Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as one fortunate attachment. We'll come out a little bit later with that. I'll come back to that. And what it essentially said, and I was actually saying, I knew the Dharma talk or Dharma field, Dharma talk was coming up in a couple months. And I said, I'm going to talk about this. I really like this sutra. But I do keep a file of what I talk about at various places when I go. So if I get invited back, I don't talk about the same thing because I can't remember what I talk about. And I looked, checked my notes, and I said, Bhadekaraka Sutra, Dharma Field, 2022. I thought, don't want to do it again, only 2 years later. So, however, I'm going to say something about that because this last sentence in particular, this also includes the Zen practice you have done up until now. In the Bhadekaraka Sutra, it says, do not revive the past. Do not revive the past or do not build up your hopes upon the future. The past is gone. The future is not reached. Instead, pay attention closely to presently arising states. It's a very, very elucidating sutra, in my opinion. And it goes on to say many other things. However, that's all I'll say about it now. Maybe when I was 20 to 30, I heard this phrase, be here now. And I think it was coined by Ram Dass. Okay. And I thought, oh, wow, I've never heard such a thing. And I thought it was brand new. It's like, because in my mind, it was new. I thought it was new throughout the whole universe. However, 2,500 years ago, Buddha said exactly the same thing in that sutra. Do not revive the past. Do not build hopes upon the future. Instead, pay attention to what is arising right now. So that is what I believe Harada Roshi is talking about in this place, in this passage. Even though I say this, I am sure you will live and experience many things, learning by trial and error. You make up an effort to build up your practice, but then you become lax and it falls apart. Again, you make an effort to build up your practice, but again, you become lax and it falls apart. It is important not to give up. While living your everyday life, I ask you once again not to adopt or bring Zen into that life. Apart from those times when you are sitting quietly, I would like you to forget completely about Zen. Now this does resonate with me. I'll ask the assembly, do you understand this statement where he says you make an effort to build up your practice, but then it falls apart? Have you ever experienced that? Well, I have, numerous times. When we do long retreats sometimes, like a session, you know, you feel a kind of peace. Usually, let's hope, I mean, not in every single circumstance, but generally speaking, we feel a kind of sense of peace and contentment after, say, a long session. I'll say a 7-day session. I'll put a little plug in for Hokyoji. And if you do 7 days at Hokyoji, you're out in the wilderness. And I mean, it's not wilderness, but it's, you know, it's, you look anywhere, you can't see a building or a light at night. So anyway, there's lots of stuff coming up from nature that supports one's practice there. It's getting back to the main point. It's like, you do this retreat and then you feel relaxed and content. And you say, why can't it be like this all the time? That's sometimes, I think it's going to be like this forever. But then, I don't know, certain things start to happen. You get a little confused and agitated by this thing or that thing, and then all of a sudden, not so long after the session, you kind of feel a little not quite the same. So that's where I think Harada Roshi had the same experience, or he wouldn't be talking about it. He knows about building up and then slipping. But the point is that we just continue to practice despite these waves of coming and going. Oh, then he says, continue to persevere. Building up your practice, it falls apart. Building up, falls apart. In this way, I'm sure there will come a time when it is no longer necessary to divide Zen into two. So there won't be that. This kind of Zen or that kind of Zen. It's all Zen or it's all not Zen. Whatever you want to call it. It's just this. He continues on. He says, it is not easy to sit Zazen. Zen practice is a difficult thing. Please do not lose heart and give up along the way. It is not something that must be concluded within a set number of years. Reminds me just now, this moment. I started practicing when I was 20 or 21. I first went to San Francisco Zen Center because 20 from 74 is 50. 20 from 74 is 54, right? So 54 years ago is when I started studying. And there weren't Zen centers around here in the Midwest that I knew of. So it was either go to the East Coast or the West Coast. And I chose the West Coast. Did significant research, of course, which Zen I thought was better than the other. So I chose San Francisco. And I went there. So that was when I was 20. And basically, I said, you all know, Dogen attained awakening at 25 years old. Maybe some of you don't know that, but Dogen's like a famous Zen master, which a lot of our teachings are based on. And he was very concentrated and diligent in his practice. And that was exactly the same as me. So I thought, when I'm 25, I can achieve some kind of awakening, I'm sure. Well, 25 came and nothing happened that I could discern that was any different from anything else. Well, then I remembered Shakyamuni Buddha became enlightened when he was 35 years old. So I said, okay, it's 35. That's my target. 35 came, nothing. Nothing happened as far as I could tell. Well, then what to do? So then my new Zen hero was Zen Master Joshu, who didn't have any kind of awakening experience until he was 60. So I said, okay, let's go for that. But I was 35 at the time. 60 seemed like a long ways away, you know. Of course, now it seems like, So anyway, I practice. He lived to be 100. He didn't start teaching till like he was 100 or something like that. And then he died when he was 120. So that seemed like a good scenario for me. The way I was going, you know, it wasn't going like real quick. So I thought Joshu was the better model for me. So, now I'm 73 and I still haven't experienced anything phenomenal. Awakening moment, just little tiny ones. And then I don't like to speak about them because they go away just like that. In any event, let's okay, now I'm going to go to a different passage that I think, insightful. Just one second. Let me back up one second. Within our minds, there is an animal called greed. There's also an animal called anger, and another called folly or ignorance. In Buddhism, we call these the three deluding passions. These passions or desires are the source of all our suffering. I'll come back to that in a minute. However, if there was no greed, we would not be able to do Zazen. Without anger, the determination and enthusiasm not to lose out or be beaten would not arise. And without ignorance, there would be no reflection or introspection. For these reasons, I would like you to understand that greed, anger, and ignorance are also other names for Buddha nature. It is only because we are used by greed, anger, and ignorance that we have come to think of them as bad. First, I'm going to ask you, not really ask you, not just rhetorical. Do you believe that? Do you believe that anger, greed, and folly and ignorance is the source of all our suffering? I mean, you got to ask yourself a question now. Is that true? I'm inclined to think it is. You can think about it. I have been struggling with something physical, or challenged by something a little physical this past week. Taking two COVID tests, I'm negative, so just to let you know. But I haven't had much of an appetite, and I also haven't been able to sleep well. When I can't sleep, I do the voice of repentance. And thank you. I could use that. Thank you. Notice I'm sniffing or something. Thank you. What I do when I can't sleep is I recite the repentance verse over and over. I say, all the ancient twisted karma ever created by me. Pardon me?
Sense of all greed, anger, and small delusion.
I'm sorry, I can't understand.
Sense of all through greed, anger, and self-delusion. Is this the open admission?
Is it the what?
Never mind, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I just can't hear very well. Okay. So there's so there's these statements like these passions are the source of our suffering. So if he says there, I'd like to go through these. However, if there were no greed, oh, thank you. Yeah. Oh, I didn't finish it, did I? Yeah, all the karma ever created by me, and I say all the ancient twisted karma. And I've adapted this. We've had different translations, you know, from over 50 years of practice. So I just pick my own now out of all. Since of old, yes, through greed, anger, and self-delusion or ignorance. And Daigaku, as I said, Harada Roshi did not speak English. So this is a translation by Daigaku into English. He called it folly. And I kind of like that. I like that. That you say ignorance. What does that mean? It's like, I like things that are more concrete. For instance, I also say, and this one says it, which has no beginning, born of my body, speech, and thought. And that's what I say in my verse. At Hokkyoji, we say body, speech, and mind. And mind, I go, ugh, that's kind of, what does that mean? That's too big. Let's narrow it down to something. It's thought thinking. What do you think through my body, what I've done with my body, what I've said to people, and what I've thought? That's the source of my suffering. Oh, and I now make full open admission of it. And of course, admission has been, we've changed that. So we don't say confession, because I learned confession. And maybe we have some issue with the word confession, especially maybe if you grew up Catholic. I did not. So I don't have a problem with it. So I say, yeah, I'm just confessing it. I'm not, you know, I'm not admitting it. I'm not, What's the ava? We say at Hokyoji, I now fully avow. And then, yeah, okay, okay. I want to just confess it. I confess it. And so that's what I do to try to, if I can fall asleep. I just say it over and over and over again. Sooner or later, I'll start mixing things up. I'll say, all the karma ever created by me, which has no beginning, born in my body, speech, and mind, born of ignorance, this is when I'm starting to fall asleep. But I just keep saying that over and over. So, let's go back to this one. If there were no greed, we would not be able to do zazen. Now, we've all been taught, we know, we don't sit down and do zazen in an order to attain something. Have you heard that before?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought you might be. These guys are your teachers. Yes, so, however, we will not sit down unless we want something for the, you know, the first time. And maybe for many, many, many years, maybe we'll have this wanting, this desire to get something. But after a long time, we just see that kind of coming up and we say, well, it really, that doesn't do me any good. Right. You're sitting in zazen and you say, I want to attain enlightenment. I want to attain enlightenment. Yeah. That's not going to do you much good as far as an awakening. But still, there is something lurking that wants something or needs something. Then this one's a little interesting. Without anger, the determination and enthusiasm not to lose out or beaten would not arise. So, that kind of is a little different statement than what we're used to. Usually we say, oh, no competition, you know, just, but that's the anger. I mean, I don't want that person to get more than I have. I want to get it too. Some kind of propelling force that drives us to do this. And without ignorance, there wouldn't be reflection or or introspection. So, as he says, as he goes on to say, I would like you to understand that greed, anger, and ignorance are also names for Buddha nature. And so, before I comment, I'll just go on a little bit more because Harada Roshi probably explains it. You may recall the expression, everyday mind is the way. Anger, ignorance, greed, as well as all kinds of anxiety, impatience, irritation, exist within the everyday mind. So if this expression is true, that everyday mind is the way, then everything in our everyday life will be the way. So our ignorance, anger, and greed are still part of we need to work with them. We can't try to get rid of them. And I'll just do a little. I don't do well when I don't feel well, you know, physically. I've determined in this past week, when I'm approaching my death, I don't want anyone around me. Or especially any Zen people. Because they're going to see me and they're not going to be impressed by my practice. Just, I can tell from this little bout of illness I had this week, I get really cranky. And, you know, I used to be an oncology nurse, so I was with a lot of people who were very close to death and who died. So I saw people die in many different ways, many different ways. I came to the conclusion that people die the way they live. If you're an angry person through your life, you'll die as an angry person. If you're kind and gentle person, you'll die with kindness and gentleness. That was my conclusion. So observing myself this past week, I wondered, have I really done Zen practice my whole life or not? Because it didn't feel like it. And that's just my own deal. That's why I'm not going to have any Zen people around me, because if they see me, they'll say, Dokai was, his practice was, it was, it just did not work. Like, I've been with people who are very, have very difficult death, very, very difficult death, just screaming, and it is not pleasant to be around. It's not pleasant. There was this one person who was one of my patients who kind of was in that state, just really, really agitated. And his son came and talked to me. And I guess they had a pretty difficult family situation. And he said, he's doing this on purpose. Just to irritate us. Because, I'm a nurse, so I can't make judgments. So, well, just listen. Okay. But he was really upset with his father. Okay. Here I am. Okay. Oh, yeah, it's tough. Okay, anger, ignorance, greed, as well as all kinds of anxiety, impatience, and irritation exist within the everyday mind. This is called everyday mind as it is the way. So as it is italicized and has a hyphen. So he's using as it is a one word. Everyday mind as it is the way. I would like you to realize that it is a mistake than to throw away something bad that is inside of us. In Buddhism, however, everything is Buddha nature, so there's nothing to throw away. The problem lies within your thoughts or how you think. Inevitably, you cannot accept your thoughts, so you create a distance between you and them. But as I often say, Zazen is a way to verify that you and your thoughts are one. We practice so that we can confirm this. So that's the problem. Even though I'm reciting this karma thing, I just get, with this illness, I get so anxious inside my stomach, kind of aches. And then I start to get mad. Why can't I sleep? So, but I'm getting better at saying, okay. If I sleep for 30 minutes, I'll be okay. And so I just stop worrying about, I don't care if I sleep or don't sleep. As you know, in the Fukan Zazengi, or maybe some of you know or don't know, it says, do not think. Think of non-thinking. How is that done? And Harada Roshi's comment is, I think there are many of you who think, I must not think. So you suppress thought. This is the worst thing you can do. You are suppressing the natural flow of Dharma itself. Don't think of trying to suppress thought. By thinking, don't think, your essential nature is lost. Without any freedom or comfort, you only end up sitting and thinking of trying to get rid of suffering. This is the sickness of not knowing that the thought of getting rid of suffering is suffering. Okay. Let's see. Looking for a passage. Oh, yeah, here it is. So continuing with perseverance, going back to that. He says, mistaken zazen and mistaken guidance result when, figuratively speaking, the teacher first makes a suit of clothes and a pair of shoes into which you must make yourself fit. This is a grave error. A similar mistake occurs when the teaching prescribes that you mimic the teacher's form until the teacher releases you from that form. Now, this is something I have direct experience with. I have two Dharma transmitted people, women. And their names are Myo-o and Myo-on. I did not give them those names. Hariya Roshi gave those names. And it's just a fact that, you know, I have to work hard not to mix their names up sometimes. And that's really, really dangerous. If I mix them up. So anyway, in any event, Myo-o grew up in Chicago. Myo-on grew up in New York City. I grew up in a small town in Iowa. Now they're both Jewish. Just to let you know that. I would say we have the most completely opposite personalities that are possible. We do not act or speak in the same ways. And they asked me to be their teacher, and I said yes. And I thought, well, okay, they're a little different from me, but I'm going to make them like me. I'll straighten them out. That was a mistake. You can't do that. So that is an example of I making a suit of clothes, a pair of shoes that I want them to wear, fit into, and wear. A grave error. Now, because of that, I would become quite irritable sometimes with them. So I have to say, I probably have not learned anything more from two other people than those two people, even though we have really been challenged with each other over the years. And, you know, we're still working on it, actually. So the idea, until they become like me, then I would say, okay, you can go now. But that never happens. So we have to accept people just as they are. And basically, it's just, do you do the practice? Can you do the practice? I feel now that when we offer Dharma transmission, to do the Dharma transmission with someone, you know, it's not about how they speak or how they act too much. It's just basically, will they continue to do the practice? You know, or do I have confidence? They will continue to just keep practicing for the rest of their lives. And these two people are very actively practicing. So that's, I'm happy. About that. So I would say, you know, this Zen practice we do brings up a lot of stuff in our life. And we just have to open ourselves up to receive it all. And sometimes that's not easy. Harada Roshi says, this is not easy. If it were Katagiri Roshi, he always says, this is not so easy. Do you remember? Read that? He always says, it's not so easy. But Harada said, it's not easy. But I kind of like, it's not so easy. Well, so there you go. It's not so easy, this practice. But it's rewarding. I've spoken for 45 minutes. I think that's enough. I'm always reminiscent of having grown up Methodist. The sermon was never longer than 15 minutes. Was that the case for most of you in your growing up? No? Longer?
Hour.
Hour? Were you, I mean, in here? I know, here.
No, 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 sorry, Catholic Church.
Huh?
Catholic Church.
Oh, really, an hour? Wow. Oh, okay. Well, like I say, I didn't grow up Catholic. Maybe that was one of the protesting of the Protestants. We don't speak for them. I don't know, Lutherans and Presbyterians, I know, it was it 15 minutes, 20? Yeah. Anyone a Lutheran? 15, 20? Yeah, yeah. Then we get into, then you start learning Zen and they give you an hour. Like, what the heck am I going to talk about for an hour? So, sometimes I would teach children and, you can't speak, you know, for an hour. And I had a really hard time, actually, when I first started. I went up to Alaska a couple times because Katagiri Roshi had started a group up there and he got too busy to travel, so they'd ask someone else to come up. So I went up there and I had never worked with children before, but there were like two families who had children and said, will you do something with the kids? I said, okay. And so I was up there giving my little talk in front of about four kids or five. And I was going along and then one of the children who was about, oh, I don't know, four, maybe five, I don't know, looked at me and turned to his mom and said, Mommy, I don't like that man. Well, that was a wake-up call. So when I got back to Minneapolis, I signed up to be the director of the youth program. And I said, I'm going to learn how to do this, how to talk to kids. And I kind of did. And my one thing that I came away from that from was that if you can't say it to a kid, you probably can't say it at all. You know what I mean? Kids are unfiltered. They're just, you know, taking it in at that moment. That's why I don't like him. It's very immediate. Now, it's the same with adults. I could be in this room and they're thinking, I don't like him. But you don't say it. We don't say it because we have those filters. But I'm saying if you can't actually say it to a kid, you're probably really not saying it at all. Anything real. Well, now I've talked for 49 minutes. So I don't know. Do you have any time for questions or something like that? Do we end at 10 or something? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
I just want to say, Dokai, first, thanks for an excellent talk. But another thing is, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I used to be around you sometimes at Hokioji for a week.
Uh-huh.
And I would say you are a kind, gentle person, and you don't have to worry about how you're going to die.
Okay, I won't worry. I will let that anxiety just throw it away, or I'll make it my enlightenment, my awakening. Okay, I don't have to worry, I'm going to die. Oh, I read something interesting the other day by Iyengar, master. He said, live happily, die majestically. Die majestically. So he lived to be 96 or something, I think. It was just a poster of B.K. Iyengar. You know, for the Iyengar type of yoga. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. Okay, I'm going to live happily and die majestically. Well, I can't beat that. I'll do my best. Okay, well, thank you for that encouragement. I'll take it to heart.
I've brought your lips. I mean, you haven't seen in many years. Roger Lips.
Pardon me?
Roger Lips.
Yeah.
I used to kind
of... Oh, you're Roger Lips. My gosh. Nice to see you, Roger. I didn't recognize you. Is there anybody else in here who knows me from a long time ago? I mean, besides, you know, I'm talking 30 years ago. No? Okay. Yeah, well, of course. Norm and Steve have known me. Oh, I should tell. Should I tell that story? You know, I came to Minnesota Zen Center when it was in southeast Minnesota or Minneapolis. And Norm was there, always there. He came every day, every morning, and every evening to Zazen. So really appreciate having practiced with you, Norm. Very steady.
That's
weird,
too.
Is it? Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
You can see it. Yes. Anything else? We got a few more minutes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.